Good afternoon, everyone. We're going to give the Vice Chairman a moment to grab his seat here, but I want to welcome everyone to our second retail market investigation en banc hearing. My colleagues and I are pleasure to welcome everybody back. I just want to give everybody a false sense of security that we are paying attention to time here this afternoon. I'm going to put my watch down. The agenda calls for a 5 p.m. adjournment, and I would encourage all the presenters, if we can work maybe an hour shorter than that, that would be great, but I don't want to cut into anybody's time. And now it's a pleasure to welcome Judge Barnes, who will be overseeing today's hearing, and she will lay out the ground rules for the en banc hearing today. I want to welcome Judge Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, everyone. I am Administrative Law Judge Elizabeth Barnes, and this is the time and place for the second en banc hearing in the investigation of Pennsylvania's retail electricity markets at docket number I-2011-2237952. As a courtesy to our speakers today, please turn off your cell phones, or at least put them to silent mode. Also, I ask that any conversations take place outside of the hearing room today. And for those people on the telephone participating by phone, please place your phones on mute. Although your comments will be transcribed by our court reporter, Judy Schuller, here today, I will not be swearing in any of the panelists. While interested parties are welcome to submit written comments after this hearing no later than November 23rd, 2011. The Commission will then consider your comments in reviewing its staff recommendations associated with the development of an intermediate work plan. Comments should be directed to the email address ra-rmi@pa.gov. Comments will be available on the Commission's website, www.puc.state.pa.us. Any written testimony submitted by our panelists will also be posted to the website after today's hearing. If the panelists have written testimony that they wish to submit, I ask you to give two copies to our court reporter today at the beginning of your panel's discussion. Extra copies of comments will be available at the table outside of the hearing room today. I note further that an audio tape of today's hearing will be available on the Commission's website, and today's hearing is being videotaped by the Pennsylvania Cable Network for rebroadcast at a time later on in the future. And also we have Fox 43 News here today, and they have told me that they plan to broadcast a news report tonight at 6:30 and at 10 p.m. KYW Radio is also present. Thank you. We are privileged to have many distinguished panelists here today who will be addressing the commissioners this afternoon. I ask the panelists to let me know at the beginning of your presentation how you are allocating your 15 minutes between panelists. This is for the customer referral program panelists, the retail opt-in auction section, and default service plans beyond June 2003 section. So I ask you to be sure to have your microphones on. I ask you to sign the green and white sheets that are located on your tables. That's for the court reporter. And if you are using a PowerPoint presentation, please identify the content of the panel, of the slide you are referring to while speaking. I ask you to observe the time limits that are imposed in the agenda. To assist in this, I will hold up a yellow card when you have 30 seconds left and a red card when your time is up. After the panel members speak, there will be a period for questions from our commissioners, and we do have a break scheduled for 3:05 p.m., but whether we take that break is at the discretion of the commissioners. Finally, I ask the panelists, please do not discuss any cases that are currently pending before the commission. And with that, I hand it back to Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Barnes. Before we begin, do any of my colleagues have any opening statements? Hearing none, we'll introduce our first panelist, Dr. Terry Madonna, who is the chairman and CEO of Terry Madonna Opinion Research. Dr. Madonna, welcome. And
thank
it's
you.
A pleasure to have you here for our second en banc hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the commission. I will be brief. I was commissioned by Constellation Energy to take a look at the state of energy competition in the state, which we did in September in a random telephone survey of 801 Pennsylvania adults. And we turned that information over to Constellation Energy, and I think the full report is available. What I've done for this presentation is to pick out some highlights, and because there were skip patterns in, meaning that, for example, some people, and I'll get into that in a minute, may be aware that they could change suppliers. Not everybody looked into it, and so subsequent to that, we looked at different subsets of Pennsylvania adults, and I put together a couple of slides that will, I think, explain that. And I think there are three or four big points that need to be made. First of all, let's say that now we're talking here about all adults that that we surveyed. 88% of all adults in the state are aware that they could change their electric suppliers, but only 44% looked into actually changing the electric supplier. That meant that there was a substantial number of people who did not. In fact, about 43% did not. And when we looked at those who did not, we found probably three overriding considerations. Number one, a fair number of people just happy with their supplier, just literally happy with the current electric supplier, irrespective of cost. The other one, big takeaway, was that there was simply people who were not convinced that there'd be long-term savings. I think what we have in our consumer-based society today is a lot of marketing and a lot of advertising that talks about savings, particularly first-time savings. And I think there are a fair number of people in our state who did not look into changing electric supplier because they did not believe that there would be long-term savings involved in it. And the third factor would be what I'll just call time and hassle, you know, the time involved, the hassle of going about doing it. And so those three considerations were probably the most evident in the research that we did. So now let's just take a look at, I'm sorry, I went a little too fast. Let's take a look at the 44% who looked into changing electric suppliers. So of that 44%, now that's all we're dealing with, that little subset who had actually looked into changing. And we were specifically asked to do some research on PA PowerSwitch. Of course, the website that has all sorts of considerations about how to go about switching, what it means, and a variety of other factors that consumers can evaluate when they consider making a switch. So of the 44% of all adults who looked into, but only 36% had ever heard of PA PowerSwitch. And of those, only 18% actually visited the website. But, and I think this is a very important but, of those who visited the site, almost 9 in 10 were very satisfied with it, with the site, and found it easy to use. So if we can just go through this a bit, here's the way I think moving forward to think about this. There are too many people who have not looked in to changing electric suppliers for the reason that I've outlined. Of those who have, too few people looked at PA PowerSwitch, but those who have looked at it are overwhelmingly satisfied. And I think that's not a difficult message to understand about what needs to be done moving forward to try to engage our residents, you know, electric consumers, to consider making a change. Now, there's one other big point that I will make before I end my presentation. And here's a slide, likelihood of switching electric supplier if it reduced electric bills by 10%. So you get a huge number of people tell us, 78%. But look, a one in five, maybe, say that's not enough. Well, why would they not say it's enough? Maybe they want more than 10%. Maybe there are these other factors that I talked about that just don't engage, you know, electric consumers to consider making the change. So there are other considerations here that, you know, probably not need to detain us here because of this big message that I think our research showed. If you want cross tabs or, you know, other aspects of this, I'm more than happy to send it in. For example, we did ask people about who their supplier was. If you want, you know, to know with a specific supplier, if there's enough folks who indicated they use that supplier, we can certainly supply that data to you at a subsequent time. And that we'll turn over the file itself, the data file. This research was done, you know, for Constellation Energy. If they request it, I'm more than happy to turn over the data file and to have, you know, the methodologist, Burwood Yost, my longtime associate, who's the head methodologist, to work with you, you know, to provide whatever information we can. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Madonna. I'd like to take a couple moments before we get into our next panelist. If any of my colleagues have questions, I'll start with Commissioner Whitmer.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Madonna, a question for you on page or slide 3, where you talk about the 10% savings. Was there any, in your questioning of consumers, had any other percentages that kind of fell out for you? You know, 5%, did that, you know, move the dial at all, or was 10 really the starting point?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, there were some other considerations irrespective of price that sort of struck me as somewhat relevant. For example, we did find that if a supplier had other products which a consumer used, that was somewhat important. We, again, without getting into all the detail with the numbers, the other consideration was whether or not the supplier provided HVAC services. So as I looked at this, price is one thing, obviously, and I think everybody's, you know, more or less cross-conscious given the caveats that I just added. I think depending on their relationship with their supplier, I think that's probably something that we didn't delve into enough, because it was not the nature of this research, that you know, subsequently ought to be examined a good bit more in detail. You know, what is the relationship with a supplier? What do they think of that supplier in terms of services? What do they get out of it other than the cost savings, efficiency, service? All of those things might be a factor as well when it gets to some people making a choice. The other aspect, Commissioner Whitmer, is sometimes, and I know I'm not going to shamelessly promote a TV station that I frequently appear on, but I know that, you know, we did a lot of promotion of this through our consumer affairs reporter, Brian Roach. And, I mean, we put out all sorts of stuff about how to do it, referring to your website here. And it's still interesting how few people, when knowing what they knew, went ahead and made the change. And I think that needs to be explored in subsequent. Sorry for the shameless self-promotion for the station I did not mention.
We'll hold you harmless here.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Commissioner Gardner.
Actually, I think my question was answered by Dr. Madonna, and I also welcome you here to the commission, and we really appreciate the information that you provided. Speaking of supplier, currently I would say that given the number of folks that are shopping, was there any real takeaway about the existing supplier that you can elaborate on, meaning the current EDC?
I'm sorry, sir, you dropped out there.
Yeah, no, we have a new sound system here that
okay.
We're trying to. The question was there any real takeaway in the survey about the incumbent electric distribution companies that would generate the level of loyalty that seems to be inferred from your data.
Yeah, other than ask who this, you know, which, to be more grammatically correct, which supplier? No, we did not explore that. But again, that's another consideration when you get down to why someone will keep the supplier that they have. That, I think, is also a serious consideration, but that was not the intent of the research, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner Gardner. Vice Chairman Coleman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Dr. Madonna. I wanted to go back to your point about the comment on time and hassle. Is there any data to that? Is this the time it takes to switch to a competitive supplier, or is it electronically, or is it the time of actually seeing that competitive supplier on their electric bill?
Yeah, we only ask people, you know, they volunteered that as a consideration. We did not delve into it. That's not, you know, our purpose was to get sort of a general overview so that Constellation Energy, when using this data, could think about the big considerations here. But I think, you know, to be candid with you, this begs for a much more intensive research project to go to these questions that I think are very appropriate and very important if we want to do something about, you know, the almost 4 in 10, more than 4 in 10 people who haven't even thought, you know, didn't even bother to think about it. And that's that, and there's, I talked to my colleague, and, you know, there, you know, maybe 20, 25% of the people who just aren't going to switch. They're just so content. And unless you can make the financial side of it so huge, they say for 10%, I'm happy with my supplier, I get good service. That's another, and I think that we may have underestimated that as sort of a bar to more into the competitive environment. It's a great question, but I don't have a good answer for you, sir.
Thank you. Commissioner Cawley.
Dr. Madama, obviously those customers who are happy with their current supplier don't understand they'd get the same service even if they chose an alternative supplier. The distribution end of it has stayed regulated under our rates and terms and conditions of service. But
that's a great point.
One of your other takeaways was that the amount of savings just isn't enough to motivate them to make a change.
Yeah.
Well, switching, I suppose, isn't for everyone. If you are a very wealthy person, $100 to $200 or $300 a year, depending on whether you're a electric heating customer, for instance, may mean nothing, but if you are less than a wealthy person, it might mean something. How did you choose your sample of people to interview? Was it across the economic income spectrum?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, we did 801 randomly selected people, weighted back to, look, all polls that are done right now have certain difficulties reaching population. We use, you know, census data. We use an iterative algorithm without getting into the methodology in which we weight it back for 5 different considerations, and that pulls the data back into line with the socioeconomics of the state. But you raise in the final analysis, I think people need to understand the full impact of the savings and not the one-time saving. They need to realize over time, the cumulative effect of the saving. And so while I don't do marketing work, it's beyond my humble ability to understand that, it seems to me that any plan moving forward ought to make that emphasis. And again, your point to the, you know, it's not the distribution of, you know, where the power is generated in that service, that's a great point. And I don't think people fully understood that. That's something else that in whatever marketing and advertising that goes out ought to be made clear.
Just one other question. We've run into this brand misplaced, actually, brand loyalty, because it really doesn't make any difference. The other misconception that we've picked up in our meetings with consumers is a fear that if you switch that you will be penalized by your distribution company. You'll be the last to be restored if your service goes out. Again, which is a misconception, because we have metrics that make sure the distribution company does its best to restore service, even if you have two huge storms in a row. Did you run across that second misconception?
No, we didn't ask for it, but I am aware of it because I've done interviews with folks in the industry that have made that same point, that there wouldn't be any, exactly the point you're making. I think, again, what this begs for is a holistic, Mr. Chairman, a holistic approach to whatever steps moving forward, as I think every one of those questions clearly indicates.
Thank you, Commissioner Cawley. And I'll just pick up on two themes. Commissioner Cawley and my colleague, Commissioner Gardner, picked up on is this brand loyalty. A lot of confusion out there. Obviously, the Act was passed in 1996, and we're kind of now made this final transition into 2011. So a lot of people haven't, I guess it's at 24% you outlined in your survey. They're aware of it, but they haven't made an affirmative choice to switch. And what's perplexing to me is not only are they going to save money, but you couple with that our Act 129, our statewide energy efficiency programs made available to customers, where customers can save $30 to $60 a month on CFL light bulb discounts, refrigerator pickup. In my case, I'm a PECO customer. I participate in their load control devices on my air conditioning units. So with all that being said, it's perplexing to us that with all the tools now made available to customers, that we only see 20% of the residential population shopping. If I showed you the numbers on the industrial and small business side, those numbers are off the charts. And so there's a disconnect there. So I guess my question to you is, You stress consumer education, which I think there's a lot of constituencies in this room today that agree we have to do more on the consumer ed. Thank you for the shameless promotion of our website, which we're very proud of. But I mean, obviously we wouldn't have you here today and showing us these survey results if you didn't think there's room for improvement. That's basically my question.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about it. And I think that you now know after this survey and others and your own both anecdotal as well as formal hearings that there are unanswered questions by consumers or misinformation by consumers. Look, this is complicated stuff. I mean, make no mistake about it, for the average consumer. As a teacher for most of my adult life, I can tell you it's not easy to understand for most of our residents. And I think that's why the message has to be repeated over and over again. You need allies in the media, not just, you know, stations like mine that really went out and promoted it. And it's not an easy slog. It's going to be tough. It is complicated, and it has all sorts of parts to it. And I don't think many people are aware of all the efficiency as well as the deductions in a variety of ways that people get an energy saving, the cost savings that they get by using more energy efficient products. I mean, this is a huge change in a relatively short period of time. But I certainly agree. Holistic, take the problems, think them through, and figure out how to get more information out to consumers. I think you're right, Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Madan, I know my colleagues and I appreciate you taking the time out of your hectic schedule to be with us, and really do appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Now, it's a pleasure to welcome John Reyes, the co-founder, and Kevin McCloskey, Chief Operating Officer of Alpha Buyer. John?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, your mic's not on.
There we go. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I want to start off by thanking the Commission for allowing Alpha Buyer, a small Pennsylvania startup, to participate in today's session. My name is John Raish. I am the co-founder of a company called Alpha Buyer. I'm here with Kevin McCloskey, our chief operating officer. Alpha Buyer is a local Pennsylvania-based startup with a goal of helping customers get the best rates, terms, and conditions for the services they pay for every month, namely their monthly bills. We do this by educating consumers on what it means to switch from one alternative supplier to another, both electricity and natural gas and soon other categories. We provide peer-to-peer communication tools for people to learn about energy switching and share that information with their friends and family in their network. And we support customers at the time of enrolling with an alternative supplier during their contract and at the end of their agreement to really give them kind of a third-party look at what it takes to switch and what makes sense. We are a broker. We are not a supplier. We're an independent company. And Kevin here will go through the results of a survey that we performed because as a consumer advocate, we were just as interested as you are on energy deregulation awareness, both electricity, natural gas, as well as the reasons that people are not switching. And we're using that actively day to day in our business. So with that, I'll let Kevin go through the survey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Commission. My name is Kevin McCluskey. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of Alpha Buyer. As my colleague had mentioned, one of our purposes or one of the things that we try to focus on is consumer education as part of our business. And we conducted a survey to the purpose of the survey being understand why people aren't switching so that we could tailor our information and messaging to best address the needs and or concerns of consumers. We employed Zumerang Data Services to conduct a random internet sample, 455 Pennsylvania adults, to measure both awareness of energy deregulation and also consumer sentiment, to understand their thoughts relating to deregulation. And what we found, the high level echoes what Mr. Madonna had previously highlighted, that there's a fairly high level of awareness of energy deregulation, which is testament to the great work done by the commission here. There's a bit of a divergence between electricity and natural gas, probably related to the timing and emphasis on the recent rate cap lifting of electricity. But overall, nearly 90% of consumers are aware of energy deregulation, almost similar for electricity, 86 electricity, 57 for natural gas. And then when we looked at those who are aware of energy deregulation, had they switched to an alternative energy supplier, we found much lower numbers, which were consistent with statewide data, nearly 20% or 21% in our survey, 27% for electricity, 10% for natural gas. And then we delved into the sentiment areas, understanding why consumers have not switched. And we found surprised us at the time that it was given a range of various choices to choose from regarding the reasons for not switching to alternative energy provider. 40% or 2 in 5 said simply the savings were not worth it. The potential savings from switching to an energy alternative supplier wasn't worth it for them. So that was pretty consistent among all demographic groups as well. So that was by far the highest, the most dramatic reason for, based on age, based on demographic, based on income. It was simply the savings just aren't worth it. There were some other factors to be considered as well in terms of skepticism, risks, scams, just information and comprehension around confusion or being overwhelming for them. And what we found in this is that the savings are significant, as was just talked about among the commission here. $200, $250, $300 a year for the average consumer if it's an electricity and natural gas user. So it's fairly anecdotal at this point, and we intend to try to follow up to dive a little deeper and back this up with empirical evidence. But we believe it. The consumers believing the savings is not worth their time and effort may be due to sticker price. I mean, when you talk, consumers don't think in relative terms necessarily in terms of percentage, nor do they really think when you look at nominal terms for energy. The differences between supplier A and supplier B can sometimes be tenths of a cent. So, but when you consider that many consumers will drive 3-5 miles out of the way to save 10 cents on a gallon of gas, and over the course of the year, those efforts may save them $60 in their gas bill. And with 3, 4, 5 minutes of their time in front of their computer, going to PA PowerSwitch, finding all the information consolidated, streamlined, organized, finding an alternative energy supplier, and saving $250 to $300, 4 or 5 times that savings. It's just, we're focusing on that, taking that information and trying to apply it from an education standpoint, a communication standpoint, those sort of analogies to help it translate into, tangible savings. So that's the summary of our findings. Thank you for having us here today, and I'll take any questions.
Kevin and John, thank you. What we're going to do is we're going to move into the next two panelists and then come back to you kind of in a roundtable format with my colleagues. So it's a pleasure to welcome Chris Kelleher, Senior Director of Government and Regulatory Affairs with Direct Energy, and I think he's going to be rolling out the ZOGBI poll results.
Correct. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. It's a pleasure to be here. At Direct Energy, one of the things we take pride in is knowing that we don't know everything. In fact, the older I get, the less I know. And so we have taken a number of efforts to try to discover more about what customers are thinking in our industry. And with respect to this particular investigation, we've done a couple of things. One is we engaged the ZOGBI firm to conduct some polling for us, which I'll be describing. And we also engaged Dave Sackett's firm to do some customer focus groups. And I will try to be as brief as possible because I really think that's the good stuff, hearing directly from the customers about what they've had to say about all of these things. I think you'll see some real themes developing here, which is actually very heartening. The surveys that we had ZOGBI do back in May of this year were really a follow-on to the survey work that we did last year in conjunction with the FirstEnergy Allegheny merger case. And we wanted to expand the surveys that we did then, which were limited to the four service territories, to the rest of the state. And so we had them look specifically at the PPL, PECO, and Duquesne service territories. And there you see the approximate breakdown, about 51% PPL, 31% PECO, and 18% Duquesne. And I think the most significant part of that breakdown is when we get to the actual results here. I think it explains some of the distinctions that we see from the survey results from Alpha Buyer and from Dr. Madonna. For example, we found that about 34% of the surveyed adults had switched to a competitive supplier. But again, since we have a predominant number of them had been in the PPL service territory, where again, I think there has been the most switching, that sort of explains that result. I believe if you looked back over the entirety of the survey work that we had done, the total number of switching customers would be about in line with what Dr. Madonna and Alpha Buyer found. The other significant results we found were that this remains a predominantly price-driven market, which again, very consistent with what you've heard. 88% cited lower price of the people who'd switched as the reason they switched. The next most frequent factor, environmental reasons, was 3%. So this is a price-driven market for now. The other quite remarkable findings, I believe, were among those who hadn't switched, the reasons that they gave, and again, this is very consistent with what the others have found. I've characterized these things as factors that are within the commission's control. And I should really expand it to say, in many ways, it's they're factors that are within all of our control. They are not purely related to consumer preference, I believe. And when you really dig into these, 17% don't understand the process and don't want to be bothered. People don't say that about grocery shopping. Even though they don't want to be bothered, they still go out and buy groceries. 15% remain loyal to their current company. These are the people who haven't switched. So they're loyal, again, going to Commissioner Cawley, your point. They're loyal to their utility, who is selling them default service, even though that has no impact on the financial well-being of that company. 11%, too much of a hassle. 9% still didn't know it was possible. And 3% were this factor, which is definitely out there, where people are afraid that it will result in them getting somehow less reliability. Now, when you look at these things, I think you can draw some conclusions among all of these things that I think are reflected in the customer focus groups that Mr. Hackett will talk about. I think this electricity industry is sometimes misunderstood as a low interest product. It is not a low interest product. It's a low control product. People don't believe they have control over this particular part of their lives, but they want control. And this is why I believe the things that we have to do are clear and are the very things you're doing in this proceeding. We must make it simpler for people. Again, too much of a hassle. Don't understand and don't want to be bothered. Didn't know it was possible. You could say all these things about the other things that people shop for and shop for quite actively, but yet they still shop. And so the simpler we can make it for people to get out and try the competitive market and get the value that's out there for them, I think the greater good we'll be doing for the people of the Commonwealth. The second thing is that they do want control. We've begun to roll out products that are differentiated beyond mere price. We have a free Saturdays product, which has been an extraordinary success in the PPL service territory. That's an expression of people's desire to take control over their electricity usage. And I believe the way that you can drive more product differentiation, this was consistent with something that Dr. Madonna found, people would be about 75% more likely to take electricity service from a company that also offered HVAC services. So the natural transition, I believe, of this market is that you get people into the market, you make it simple for them to shop, you make it simple for them to get these available savings, and then that allows companies like Direct Energy and others to attain sufficient level of scale to begin to differentiate themselves with non-commodity and non-traditional and non-purely electricity-related products. And then you will get the kinds of effects that I think Dr. Madonna and Alpha Buyers results showed. You will get more people choosing on those grounds, and at that point, this market will begin to look much more like the other consumer product markets that we're more familiar with. And with that, I think I'd like to, again, turn over to Mr. Sackett, who will tell you about the focus groups that we did.
Terrific. Thank you very much. There's tons of good data out there, and you've heard three really good pieces of it, all very consistent. Does a really good job of telling you what people think. But what we wanted to do was go down to the next level and conduct a series of focus groups. We actually sat and had a conversation with people so that we could help understand better why people think the way they do. You know, the sort of the first rule that I think we all recognize when we move from the realm of public policy into the realm of public debate is that truth is what people believe. And part of what we wanted to get at was what are the truths that people believe, some of them correct, some of them not correct. And so what we did was we did on behalf of Direct Energy a series of four focus groups. We chose Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, a suburban location, an urban location, a PPL area, and a PECO area. All of our respondents were over the age of 30 years old. About half of them were small business owners, in addition to being folks who worked outside of the home. We tried to create a mix of folks who were aware that they could purchase electricity from other companies and folks who were not. And we didn't recruit anybody who'd already decided to make a switch, so that we were dealing with that part of the populace, some of them aware, some of them not, but try and sort of replicate the group that we're trying to reach out to. Awareness of the energy competition. There is soft awareness, and it's been reported very significantly by other folks. Harrisburg respondents cited that they've had contacts from competitive suppliers. People said that they've received some direct mail and those sorts of things. Respondents in both cities noted that local utilities were also making consumers aware of the opportunity that they could switch. And this was one of the questions they had. Why were their local utilities telling them about this? Why would they do this? Truth number one that people believe, there is a misperception that these folks would be in direct competition with and not working hand in glove with their local suppliers. And so as many of you commissioners have talked about, what are the things that we have to do to get rid of the impediments that stand in people's way so that they will at least even consider or think about switching? And one of the first ones is to understand or make people comfortable with the notion that this is not competing with their current local supplier, who they're very, very comfortable with and like a great deal. There are very strong notions about the positive nature of energy competition. People do like their public utilities, unlike the cable company and the telephone company and other folks that they have frustrations with. Aside from some concerns about price, people are generally very comfortable with and confident in their local supplier, and they feel good about those folks. And again, why would you leave somebody who you like and who you enjoy and believe that is providing you service unless there is significant incentive in there and there's you know, some sort of loyalty component in there? But people very much believe that competition should exist. Key consumer questions, and I think there were several commissioners that were sort of talking about this earlier on. Here's sort of the impediments or what people said to us. Why should I even think about this? Is switching to a competitive retailer financially worth the switch? And financially worth is in the eye of the beholder. So for somebody who is a small business owner, as one of the commissioners already mentioned, that's a very different level of construct than it is for somebody else. But that's one of the big questions that they had. Is switching to a competitive retailer worth the hassle? Hassle is not just time. Hassle is, you know, mental pressure. How many hoops am I going to have to jump through? How many forms am I going to have to fill out? How easy is this process? Can I trust this new company? The whole situation, I think, probably, if I had to put it down to one thing that the difficulty of people are having is the horrible time they have with their cell phones and the fact that their cell phone companies keep to disappear, and their contracts are always changing and they can never keep track of it, and they don't realize they're paying $8 million for text until after their kids have done it and that sort of stuff. And so there are those sorts of relationships that exist. Are these companies that we're talking to, are they going to be around in 5 years? How do I know that they're still going to be here next year and that if I switch to them, they won't like disappear and move to, you know, Antarctica 3 months from now? Will there be a change in service or a change in response to outages? And again, I think, Vice Chairman, you had mentioned that specifically, that that's a concern, particularly amongst the women respondents that we talked to. They were very conscious that the health and well-being of consumers often depended on the consistency of the electrical services. And then will I be locked into a contract? What are the ramifications of this new contract? Have I just bought a timeshare in Boca? How long is this going to last? These are all sort of very significant concerns that folks have. Reaction to the opt-in auction. The term opt-in auction confused people. Who's participating on it? Am I bidding on people or are they bidding on me? And so the process itself, and so that's kind of the uninformed notion, was who's doing this? Is the consumer participating in the auction or is the provider? But once you explain it to them in very simple terms, there's a very strong positive reaction to it, and they really enjoy what they've seen because it creates a one-stop shopping effort. And many of the impediments or concerns that I had raised in the previous slide are answered for them when you explain this process to them. There were a number of enticing aspects to being part of the auction, primarily the rebate check, but also the promise of no disruption of service, no cancellation fees, receiving a single bill. That was a very important element to people. They were very worried, okay, am I now going to get 11 different bills for my electricity, and who do I pay first? And we said, no, it's all going to be on that one same bill. That was something that very, very comfortable to them. And while they were open to the idea of participating in the office, in the auction, it really is necessary to provide some clarification. And so, like anything else, if you're able to explain it down to folks and make them comfortable with the two or three impediments that they have, they're very open to it. It's like anything else. When people don't know what to do, they'll vote or act to ratify the status quo, and they'll stay away from us because it's the safe choice. And if you're able to provide them with the basic pieces of information that they need so that they know that this change is a safe and easy and simple choice and that there are no risks attached to it, then they're very much more open to the process. Messengers, matter is Musk's message. And frankly, you folks sitting up there in the dais are probably the most credible messengers that exist in the minds of the public. The focus group reacted very positively to the Public Utility Commission overseeing this opt-in office and auction and delivering the message that consumers should participate in this process. Your stamp of approval, your involvement, your oversight gives people a lever of comfort and a sense of safety that's very important to this process. And it would be very helpful for you to continue to message on this as much as possible. Respondents also said that they'd love to hear about the option, not just from you folks, but also in conjunction with their local utilities and their local utility executives. The second most credible messenger that exists on this issue after yourselves are these local utilities. And they were comforted by the idea that the local utilities support the opt-in auction because the level of concern regarding potential change. And so hearing that my local provider is saying that not only is it okay for you to do it, but we encourage you to do so is tremendously helpful. A number of respondents who said that they would love to hear from consumers.
Mr. Sec, I'm sorry.
Oh.
Our court reporter needs to change tapes. And also,
oh, okay.
We are running a little bit over in time.
Gotcha.
So if you could
okay.
speed it up. Thank you.
Okay. Sure. Okay, and I'm going to I'll sort of.
Second one. Go ahead.
Sorry?
You went to your second one.
Oh, okay. My second one, that there were a number who said that they'd love to hear from consumers as well. The title auction, as I said, was a little bit confusing to folks because they didn't understand whether they were going to the highest bidder or that sort of thing, and so there may be some other language there. The rebate check, everybody understands what that is, and that term is very, very simple to understand for folks, so there was no problems there. We looked at the size of the rebate check or the signing bonus and gave people a range, you know, from about $50 to $500, and surprise, everybody wanted $500. Business owners tended to prefer the larger amount and were more difficult, not more difficult, but had a higher expectation. But for the homeowners, they were comfortable with the idea of $10 a month or about $120 a year, and that was a number that they settled on themselves as opposed to one that we had provided for them. Very important, they don't want a gift card. They don't want some other thing. They want the rebate check itself. They want it sent to them, and they want to make sure that they're automatically enrolled for that rebate check, and it's not something that they have to then go out and fill out a bunch of forms and do those sorts of things. And they want to know when they're going to get that rebate check. And so we talk about that 22% that says, no, $10 isn't enough for me. It may be that if they truly thought they were going to get the $10, that they would do it, but they're very suspicious about whether or not they're actually going to get it and how many hoops they would have to jump through in order to do so. So thank you very much for your time. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Sackett. We'll open up questions, starting with Commissioner Whitmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. McCloskey, or one of the two gentlemen from Alpha Buyer, you noted on page 3 of your slides that, you know, customers talk about savings just not being worth, you know, the effort. We've heard, you know, some other kinds of anecdotal information about why customers think that it's not worth their time. My light is on, really. what do you derive from the information that you've from the survey, you know, some reasons why customers say that it's just not worth their time, and what are some things that you think we can do or generation suppliers could do differently?
Well, what we've tried to do and where we've seen some success is change some of our
messaging.
Could
you speak into the microphone?
Yeah, I'm sorry. What we've tried to do at Applebar is provide some information provide some analogies to try and drive home the point of the potential savings, make it seem more tangible. Because using the same kind of gas price analogy as I did earlier, you see the price of gas every day. You can't escape it. It's in front of you all the time. Consumers maybe see their electricity or natural gas bill once a month. A lot of them don't see it at all because it's auto pay or, you know, it's e-bill, and they don't look at it that closely. So it's not as in front of them. So trying to translate the, you could save 10%, you could save 15% into a nominal figure on an annualized basis. You could save $250 a year. You know, it seems, makes more sense with consumers. So I think the information that's currently available is plenty sufficient. I think maybe, you know, what we're trying to do at least and seeing some success is translating that and presenting it in a different form.
Great. Mr. Kelleher, on slide 3, you noted that there's 88%, you know, really site price as the driving factor. And is that 88 of your survey sample, were those 88%, is that folks who have already switched? Is it a mix? Is it folks who have not switched?
Those are the people who had actually switched at that
point. And that was their rationale?
Correct.
Okay. And then again, on page 4, slide 4, you talk about customers that are open to someone other than the EDC being the default supplier. Was that terminology explained in your the survey?
Yes, it was. The idea that this is, if you make no choice, this is who actually provides your electricity service. And we did try, you know, one of the challenges with that particular question is that people don't have, as we all do, a fundamental understanding of the difference between the delivery company and the one that actually provides the commodity part of it. So the question did try to make sure that people understood that we were distinguishing between those two factors when it came to that question.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Whitmer. Commissioner Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to also kind of go back to John Raich and Kevin McCluskey at Alpha Buyer. And I'd just like you to expand a little bit more, if you can, on what types of education methods do you see yourselves deploying, given what you've learned as a result of the survey?
Sure. So I guess I'll start off with two quick points. There was a slide previously about who delivers the message. We see that very critical to our relationship with consumers. Our business is about consumers learning and sharing information with their peers. We know that works from our perspective. The other thing I would add is we do see, again, with the kinds of consumers we're reaching out to, there is a value-added needs that they have. When we talk about things like tools and content, additional services again that were mentioned, like HVAC or furnace services provided by a supplier, that tends to be the point at which consumers say, okay, it's savings plus value-added services. That's good. I like that. Let's go with it. You know, as far as the specific tactics that work on our end, you know, we're primarily an online company, so consumers are out there Googling and looking around for content. So that's really important for us to make sure we have that content out there, that we're providing email newsletters, guides on how people can learn about reading their bill. Most people don't study their bill and look at the specific line items. It's only when you consider an opportunity to switch that you do that. So we provide those types of tutorials. And also the truth about the plans that we broker on behalf of a supplier. We don't have fine print. we make everything 100% clear. As far as offline, I mentioned we were primarily an online company, but we do offline research as well. We're out in the field. We're educating homeowners associations, groups and associations about switching, and we're talking to mommy bloggers who are writing content about how they can save money for their households. And we're doing even some outreach to specific, somebody mentioned earlier about off-peak type of plans or special plans provided by suppliers. We're doing outreach to those specific consumers as well. Peak ORH customers in particular, we have a pretty successful campaign where we're out educating them on what it means to switch, when they should switch, given the, you know, the specifics of PECO's plan with RH customers.
Thank you. I have a more general question for all of the members of the panel. And again, given what you've learned from your various surveys and interviews, can you speak a little bit about the results, given the what I consider the relative immaturity of the Pennsylvania retail electric market?
Well, I guess I'll hazard a first shot at it. I think what it shows for us, especially among that, you know, over 50% who are not shopping, and we're not shopping for reasons that, again, seem to be, you know, to many of us, not necessarily fully, either fully rational or definitely things that we could get at with a sufficient amount of work on our part. To us, it sums up the whole idea of the status quo bias. And the fact that there does seem to be a disconnect between 80% of the people who would say they would switch for 10% savings, and the presence in some markets for sustained periods of savings well above that, where you don't even get to 40%. And so, you know, inevitably, I think you get to the question of what does an end state look like that addresses those underlying factors that relate to status quo bias? Because I would hazard to say that you have to fight from where you are. And we have the system that that the legislature and previous utility commissions put into place that sort of left everyone on default service as the default. But I would hazard to say that if you could wave a magic wand and put everyone on competitive supply, if you flip the question around, if you put everyone on competitive supply at a 10% savings, I don't think you would have many people clamoring to get back on utility service to pay 10% more. So, you know, at some point you really do need to look at an eventual transition to an underlying market structure that, you know, for once and for all kind of eradicates the remains of that status quo bias. But in the meantime, do all of these other things that the various subgroups have been looking at to help people get to the competitive market, to overcome those barriers that we can overcome with consumer education and with simplifying our message and making the value clearer to them now.
Thank you.
Anyone else want to speak to the question? I'm surprised. Okay, then I'll ask Mr. Sackett to speak to the question.
Yeah. Look, we sit here and we say, you know, how come people won't react to the savings? And why can't people see that they could save money? Ultimately, it's because they don't believe that they're going to save money. Either that they don't believe that the savings are real, or that the time and energy that they invest ends up costing them more, being more of a hassle to them saving. And so it seems to me that the most important thing is to remove concentrate and narrow cast a message from all the messengers and all the players in here that essentially says four things. Number one, the Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission wants you to look at this. We have looked at this. We believe that this is in your best interest, and you know us and see us as very strong consumer advocates, and so we are very credible here. We're telling you it's not only okay, but it's something that you should do. At the next level, then, they need to hear from their local utility, who is saying, this is something that you need to look into. It's okay. You're not being disloyal to us. You're not going to have your service disrupted. You're not going to be left hanging when the power goes out. Nothing is going to change in terms of the way that you get these services provided to you. And once you're able to remove those impediments, and people don't have to be afraid that the trade-offs or the things that they are afraid of, the negative consequences. I mean, this is a large case of Murphy's Law, okay? I'm going to get $10 back, you know, but my house is going to sink into the ground, and so that 10 bucks doesn't look so attractive. Once you remove those fears and allow it to purely become a question of finances, as have the people who have already switched, because once they've gotten through that and made themselves comfortable, then they understand that the savings are relevant to them. I think it requires a very consistent message across all the messengers and not 28 different reasons why you should think about switching.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner Gardner. Vice Chairman Coleman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to commend the panelists for their presentations. I think some excellent information for us. I don't have any questions at this time.
Thank you. Commissioner Cawley.
Just briefly, I notice, Mr. Kelleher, you said this is a price-driven market. Our website, papowerswitch.com, currently lists alternative suppliers alphabetically. We want to, in an effort to be fair. But you can toggle and have the lineup differently. Should we change from alphabetical order to lowest price to the highest price?
If you switched, that would certainly spoil our plan to change our name to AAA Direct Energy. So, I don't think so. In some ways, that kind of reinforces the idea that not only that this is a price-driven market, but that it should remain a price-driven market. And really, that is the continuing influence of utility default service. That everyone's because they're the dominant provider in the market. They are a price-only competitor, although there is some aspect of brand in default service. And so people shoot at that price, and they feel that they have to beat that price. And so if you went to a lowest to highest, then someone who is offering bundled services, but will almost certainly be required to disclose their per kilowatt hour price, our free Saturdays product, I'm not sure where that would line up, because I don't know, would you give us a weighted average? If you gave people the on-peak price, we're going to fall farther down the list. And so it would tend to continue to emphasize the primacy of competing with utility default service as what you believe is most important in the market. And if anything, we believe we should be trying to move away from that. If you were going to do anything different, I think there are some websites that have the functionality where it just switches up randomly. Mm-hmm. Which also defeats our AAA direct energy plan, but I wouldn't worry.
Perhaps we should change papowerswitch.com to better reveal the choices that you have for lining up the alternatives instead of just default. Well, you could default to alphabetically like it does. But well, let me ask you again. Some of these surveys, I'm trying to get a handle on how accurate they are. Did any of you get into, when you talked about papowerswitch.com, our website, did any of you get into the fact that it toggles to Spanish as well as English? In other words, have you surveyed Hispanic customers? We'd really be curious to know how many Hispanic customers are taking advantage of PA Power Switch and electric shopping. I'm getting a lot of heads shaking here.
You'd have to do a prohibitively large sample across the state in order to get a statistically significant cell size amongst Latino and Hispanic voters, or you'd have to directly survey them themselves. In a basic statewide sample, you're not going to get a statistically significant cell size of Latino voters.
Okay, well, perhaps somebody can do one of those surveys. I'm trying to drum up business for you here, by the way. I'm trying to help the survey industry.
Excuse me.
Did you ask, are customers aware that if they don't have computer access or access to the internet, that they can call the PUC or they can call the consumer advocate these choices, these offerings will be mailed to them with a consumer guide? Do you know of it? Were they aware of that? You don't know. The surveys didn't go that deep. Another opportunity for a commission here, I think. Well, it seems to me from your answers that the basis of a lot of the problem here is people just don't understand the difference between distribution company, your public utility, and generation, which is the electricity. And if they make if they knew that distinction, they wouldn't worry about reliability problems. They wouldn't worry about the alternative supplier disappearing. Because you're going to get the same electrons in any event. People just don't understand that. They're going to get the same electrons in any event. The distribution company is going to deliver them. And if you have an alternative supplier, it all happens behind the scene, how the money changes hands there. Seems to me that's where we've really got to concentrate our educational efforts. Doctor?
Yeah, I mean, I think one way to think about this is that we did a random sample, we have an internet survey, and we have qualitative research done through focus groups, and they are remarkably consistent. We, for the most part, using a variety of research tools, are sending you the same message. We're giving you the same information. I mean, that's pretty compelling when you think about the complexity of the research and the different approaches that get used, and I think that's an important aspect of this. The other point, just to go to your point about in our survey, for example, we end up with the census numbers for African Americans and Hispanics. Hispanics are a relatively small part of our population, 5-6%. So, and located in several regions of the state, not dispersed, And it will take, significant resources in addition to doing a separate survey, significant resources. I'm not suggesting it shouldn't be done at all. I'm merely saying there's a price factor there as well, attempting to locate. And at Franklin & Marshall, we do, interviews as the Terrence Group does with all sorts of population groups.
Well, let me conclude by thanking you. And also suggesting the first survey question for the next time you're asked to do this. The first question should be, would you leave a $100 bill on the sidewalk? How about two $100 bills? Because if you don't look into this a little bit and pick up the phone, that's effectively what people are doing here. They're leaving money on the sidewalk. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you, Commissioner Cawley. I want to yield to Commissioner Whitmer. She has an additional question. Commissioner Whitmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This will be directed to Dr. Madonna. Just a general question. When the customers or the survey respondents that you spoke with or that responded, how did we know when they made a decision not to switch? So they made a proactive decision, but it was to stay where they were. They'd done the research. They'd gone to the website. Was there any information about that?
No, I mean, we just simply asked people if in fact they had made the switch, and then we pursued the reasons why. We didn't, and it wasn't longitudinally, meaning over time, we didn't get into that question at all. But there is, in some respects, I mean, this came out, and it's also something, and as I was listening to folks here, about the relative newness of this. And that is another aspect of this that I think my colleagues would agree about how new it is to have this kind of competition. And while I think everybody would like to see it move more rapidly and more people, all of the suggestions that have been made, sometimes it's just not easy and it's going to take more time. And got some great suggestions about how to get more consumers to consider, first of all, to consider switching, and then if they consider it, what all of these considerations that they have, as Mr. Sackett points out, qualitatively, how important are they quantitatively? You know, there's a ton of really important suggestions that come out of that focus group. How important is it quantitatively to differing population groups within this state? So this is a very complicated measure, and I know far fewer people than we would like to see have switched, but it's a start, and getting through these complexities, I think, is the big road ahead.
Yeah, I mean, one gets a sense that your conversion rate from people who actually click past the first page on the website is probably extraordinarily high.
Yeah.
And that if they have committed themselves to doing the investigative work and taking and going that far, then these impediments are going to sort of disappear piece by piece through the website. The disconnect comes between those people who say, I know competition is out there, but it doesn't sound like a lot of money. It sounds like a hassle. It's not really worth my time. And so they never sort of take the next step, and there's nobody for whom they respect who's telling them to take the next step. And so if you reduce this to the lowest common denominator, driving one message from the Public Utility Commission and their local supplier saying, you don't have to accept everything that I'm saying. I simply challenge you, go to this website and look at it and take 5 minutes and look through it and see for yourself. And I would imagine if you were able to accomplish that, I think Dr. Madonna would agree that your conversion rate once they get to that website would probably be quite high.
Yeah, another
I think that's correct. But I just was wondering if there was any quantitative information there.
Yeah, another consideration is, of course, the use of social networking. I mean, I think that would take some investigation. But, you know, in our state, we have about the same percentage of people using Facebook, but not the same percentage using Twitter and some of the other, same percentage as the national average to show. And I don't know, I mean, any campaign might want to use some of these newer techniques to begin to get people, as Mr. Sackett points out, to become aware, to even think about it. And the other problem is the expansion of broadband capacity into certain parts of our state. I don't think that's as serious a problem as it would have been, you know, when this process started and that the availability of internet is. But certainly in some populations it's not. You know, there is some data to show that despite the fact that we're all wired, not everybody is wired, and we have the third oldest population in the country, that may also be a consideration for using the internet. Just, you know, some off the top of my head.
If it's thoughts. Alphabar can provide some quantitative measures to that, because we do track those sort of things. And we found that there's nearly a 2.5 times conversion rate by people who are driven to a website through a friend.
Social network.
Through social sharing.
Yeah.
If they're referred by a trusted intermediary, meaning a friend, a family member, someone they know, they take action nearly 2.5 times as often as just someone who comes to our website by themselves. So that sort of credibility by having them referred by someone they trust and know is important. So the social element is very important.
Well, I want to thank the panel again for your presentations here this afternoon. It's a nice segue into our next panel. I want to call on Michael Meath, Sonny Papowski, and Joey Valerian to assemble so we can begin our next panel.
A point of order, your chairman. Could the gentleman, before you leave, would you please sign your name on the green sheet? Thank you very much. If you did. That's fine. Thank you. Gentlemen, I remind you, Mr. Meath, Mr. Valerian, and Papowski, you have 5 minutes each. Thank you.
Um,
Before I introduce our next panelist, I just want to note I'm beginning to eat my words about the false sense of security with the watch, and remind this panel you have about 15 minutes to go through your presentations, and then obviously a Q&A with us. I'll start with our consumer advocate, Mr. Sonny Papowski, to go first on this panel. Sonny, welcome.
Don't start the clock.
Okay, thank you, Chairman Paulson, members of the Commission, and thank you for permitting me to testify on this panel and for allowing our office and consumer representatives to participate in all the panels this afternoon. I want to start by saying that when it comes to consumer education on electric choice, I think this Commission has a lot to be proud of. I've worked with members of the Commission staff from the original Council on Utility Choice with Kevin Cadden to Tom Charles and Shari Williams, Christina Pettis, Dave Hickson. I think this commission has recognized from the beginning that simply passing a law and holding technical hearings on electric restructuring was not enough, and that it is absolutely essential for consumers to understand their options and to decide for themselves whether and how much to get involved in choosing their electric supplier. I also think that our electric distribution companies and our competitive electric generation suppliers, who I'm sharing the panel with this afternoon, have stepped up to the plate and have worked collaboratively with the Commission and with my office to try to make sure that consumers receive accurate and complete information about their choices. In determining the success of all of our consumer education efforts, I would look to two measures. First, consumer awareness, and second, consumer understanding. That is, are consumers aware they have a choice of suppliers, and do those customers understand how to exercise that option if they choose to do so? I think Dr. Madonna's survey and the other surveys we've heard today confirm that a very large percentage of Pennsylvania consumers, nearly 90%, are aware that they can change their electric supplier. Dr. Madonna's survey also showed that about half of those customers, or 44% of the total sample, say they've actually looked into changing their supplier. Now, in my view, the goal of our continuing efforts should be to get as close as possible as we can to 100% awareness of customer choice, and to ensure that as many of those people as possible understand how to make that choice if they're interested in doing so. That doesn't mean that 100% of customers should switch, or that would be our goal, or even 50%. Rather, it's the percentage, it's the number of people that we can get to understand how to make a choice. Once they understand that choice, and once we've provided customers with the tools they need to make that choice, then I think it's up to them. They can switch to an alternative supplier, or they can stay with their incumbent default supplier. In terms of what works to enhance customer choice, there's no question, I think, that the Commission's PowerSwitch website is a powerful tool, a tremendous addition to the arsenal of consumer education tools in Pennsylvania. Needless to say, I think that our website and our shopping guide that we've been publishing in hard copy and on the web since 1999, and as Chairman Carr, Commissioner Cawley mentioned, we will send a copy to anyone who calls our toll-free number, a hard copy, at no cost. I think that's also a valuable tool. In terms of some of the things we've done lately, or we've seen lately, I think the letter that's going out now from a couple of our first energy companies, I think MedEd and Penelec, to all of their consumers, that actually contains real inserts from real marketers saying what they're offering. I think that's a very good program, and I hope it is successful. We've also been involved, as you know, with the retail market investigation in terms of messages that can be sent out by the Commission and by the electric distribution companies that I think are critical to inform customers about the benefits of shopping, and also, again, as been made clear, to overcome some of the misconceptions that I think have kept some customers from participating more actively in the retail markets. My only caution is that I think it's important to encourage customers to consider all their options without overstating the costs or the benefits of a particular choice. It was true in 2010, for example, here in the PPL territory, that it was pretty easy for a PPL customer to save a penny a kilowatt hour or $100 a year in 2010. It's not true in 2011. It's actually pretty difficult to save a penny a kilowatt hour or $100 a year. I just looked at my bill yesterday. I switched last year. I saved a lot of money last year. I looked at my bill yesterday from last month, and lo and behold, my price was a few hundredths of a penny higher than the PPL price to compare. I'm not complaining, but I do this for a living. And I'm just saying that it's important that when we talk about the benefits of customer choice, we make it clear to people that there are tremendous potential benefits, but we have to be clear as to what they are and how likely they are to occur. So I think, if I could just finish, Your Honor, I think we have a tremendous story here to tell in Pennsylvania. In nearly every corner of the state, we have a choice of electric suppliers. Some cases, we have dozens of choices. All customers in Pennsylvania can save money. They can lock in low prices, today's low prices, with fixed price contracts, and they can buy electricity that does not harm the environment. I think our job in consumer education is to make sure consumers are aware of and understand how to implement those choices, and then leave it up to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Sonny. I'd like to now recognize Joey Valerian, Manager of Media and Community Relations for Duquesne Power and Light.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. I thank you for this opportunity. I'll be very brief. Many of my comments will mirror what Sonny has talked about, and we'll more directly talk about some of the things that we've discussed in the recent retail market investigation pieces. We do support an expansion and continuation of consumer ed. We do think it's a very necessary process to educate all of our consumers as to how to shop and the benefits of shopping. We do need to be careful with the difference in a statewide and a local campaign, as we all know that there are different consumers in each different territory, and the messaging can be somewhat different, or sometimes shouldn't be different, depending on the type of customers that we are seeing. Regarding potential cost savings in any of these materials, our thought is that we need to be very careful. As Mr. Popowski said, stating a specific amount could be misleading, because as we've seen, the pendulum of savings does swing very widely depending on the price to compare, depending on the customer's usage, and also the EGS's offerings at the time. Finally, we do support the PA Power Switch postcard, also the EDC letter that would come under the EDC name and signed by the chairman or CEO. We do feel, however, that after those two are sent out, it would be prudent for the commission to take a step back and look to see how those pieces have worked, do an analysis to see if they've made any difference. If they have, an expansion can go from there. If not, maybe it's time to step back and see if there's other messaging that might work better or another type of piece that may work better. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now, it's a pleasure to welcome Michael Meath, regulatory consultant with the Pennsylvania Energy Marketers Coalition. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, commissioners. Appreciate the chance to be with you to talk about this very, very important subject. I'm here today on behalf of the Pennsylvania Energy Marketers Coalition, which is a group of like-minded electricity and gas suppliers who serve not only in this state but several other states, and who believe in even-handed and transparent education to help along the process of energy choice. I'm also here to represent for you a new organization that's just recently been formed called the American Coalition of Competitive Energy Suppliers, or appropriately named ACCESS, who is dedicated solely to education, not to market or sell anything, and you'll be hearing more about that organization in the months ahead. There are three quick points I'd like to make. I think many points have been made, and I'm anxious to answer questions. First, you should be commended on the tremendous amount of work that you've done, including in the education arena. I have the opportunity to work in several states around this country. Nobody has taken the type of approach to this that you have over the last several years. Second, or part 1A, I might say, is we got a long way to go. We're not done yet. There's still a lot of need. When I look at 89, 90% of people who are aware of deregulation, that's great. Day before yesterday, I took my first flying lesson. I got a long way to go, even though I learned an awful lot that day. The second point is that the efforts that are focused on cost savings that consumers may enjoy are great, but it is critical to the long-term viability of the ultimate market that we need to also explain to consumers the range of value-added and energy-enhanced products and services that they might be able to buy and that suppliers will provide. And I'll make another comment about that in a moment. It has to be distinct from cost savings, however. And third and finally, as you look down the road, we believe it's vital that this education include the subject of natural gas. Let me make just some quick supportive comments to those, and then we'd be glad to take questions. To my first point, the technical subgroup who has done so much work in recent weeks, developing a postcard, a letter from the chairman, going to go a long way to saying to consumers, it's okay, come into the water, you can try swimming if you'd like. And similarly, suppliers and utilities and the Office of Consumer Advocate have worked together pretty well and much better than they do in other states to develop these scripts to focus on the right messages. These are tremendous step forward and more progressive than so many other places. However, it cannot be emphasized enough, and just a few of your questions this morning, both Chairman Powelson as well as Commissioner Cowley, it can't be emphasized enough that consumers' concerns about how they're going to be treated by the distribution utility if they switch to another supplier is a huge impediment. And so anything we do in the days and months ahead has to focus on that. Going forward, we know staff is considering recommendations related to more comprehensive consumer education, including PSAs and other things. We strongly endorse those efforts, and I just want to make the commitment here to you. Karen knows me well from mostly being a voice on the phone, but we have somebody who's usually here at those meetings, and we want you to know that either through Access or the Pennsylvania Energy Marketers Coalition, we'll support everything that you're about and help add to that. My second point was maybe a little controversial, but it has to be with the fact that we need to take care not to make unreasonable expectations out there about what savings are going to be. In an open market, the competitive energy suppliers are going to offer consumers innovative products and services that are going to meet those individuals' needs. Fixed and variable, renewable energy, energy efficiency audits, other valued added benefits. I actually represent a company that offers HVAC service along with energy. However, in reality, if we're going to get where we want to go, those products haven't even been designed yet because the consumers are going to demand them and the last people standing are going to be the ones that are going to be able to meet them. That's why we're doing all this. You can't get that today from your regulated utility. However, there's a little bit of a slippery slope. Savings is critical, but energy choice is not solely about lower prices. It's the sexy thing to talk about. It has to be first and foremost about empowering consumers to help them make informed decisions that they want to make to take control of their own energy purchases. Suppliers can offer competitive prices and provide all kinds of ways to reduce overhead and be more competitive, but we have to be careful that it's not always a blanket guarantee that every single offer that is out there is going to offer savings. So just a caution. Third and finally, we recognize that the Commission in its wisdom has limited the scope of this investigation to electricity, and that's a massive undertaking. And certainly I don't want to come across as insensitive or unreasonable when I make the following suggestion. If the retail market investigation can't be broadened to include natural gas, we understand that. However, the consumer education campaign should be. And there's a couple good reasons for it. Number one, you don't want to cause consumer confusion. With all the focus on choice, choice, choice for electricity, we want to make sure that consumers still know they have a choice in electricity, or in natural gas, excuse me. Secondly, we want to, by combining those efforts, there actually could be just a marginal cost of including the words natural gas. That was done actually with a recent proceeding relative to marketing and sales. In fact, most consumers, not all, but most consumers consider natural gas and electricity together. Third and finally, the robust development of a natural gas choice market has a direct relationship to electricity, and I certainly, you know and live every day why there's a tie there. I'll stop there, appreciate, again, reiterate our strong support for everything that you've done, let you know that we're there to help, and glad to take any questions.
Thank you, Michael. I'd ask my colleagues, in the interest of time, we just field one question from each of us. So, Commissioner Whitmer.
Thank you. I'm short, so I have to look up this way. Mr. Meath, a question for you. Who would you suggest would be the most appropriate body or group to do the education that you're talking about? Is this primarily suppliers? Is this a role of the PUC primarily? Or what's your perspective?
It's everyone. I don't think that there's one group that can do the education. You set the tone. There are other states where we've worked to try to develop a competitive market, and if the commission doesn't set the tone, it's a game stopper. You know, no sense in trying to do anything else. So it's certainly the commission. The utilities in this state have been, as a far general rule, very open and receptive to the dialogues that we've had. The Office of Consumer Advocate, very, very critical. And it's critical that suppliers are having open discussion with the OCA because they have an important role to play. And then finally, the suppliers have to step up to the plate, which is why this group access formed itself, not to market, not to sell, simply to educate. And our efforts are going to be collaborative, where we want to share everything. We've already told Public Utility Commission staffs that we're about this and we want their input. We've told consumer protection agencies we're about this and we want their input. And frankly, what I'm trying to do is get suppliers to talk to one another, even when they're in different groups who advocate for other things differently, to talk to one another. And so in that regard, we will share everything we do with everyone free.
Thank you.
Commissioner Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have no questions, but I would like to acknowledge the panel, and in particular, Mr. Popowski, the consumer advocate.
Thank you. Vice Chairman Coleman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would echo my colleague's sentiments. Thank you all for coming today. I wanted to circle back to the comment on savings, and I believe each of you talked about a caution about quantifying savings. If the message is not about savings, and it seems to me that that seemed to be the primary driver in the survey information that we just heard from the previous panelists, what is the message?
Commissioner, I think the specific savings, saying that it's $100, it's $200, it's $400, is the dangerous part. I think it's obviously very necessary to say you can save depending on your usage. You can save depending on the types of offers, but not specifically getting into a dollar figure.
If I could take a shot, I think savings are important. Yeah, and again, my caution really went to the a quantification of savings that would go to everyone that may not in fact apply to everyone. In other words, to make promises that we might not be able to keep in some service territories. But I always talk about, and I do this a lot, I talk to consumers about savings, locking in today's low prices with the fixed price contracts. A lot of people, I think, are interested in environmental benefits. So I think savings are important, but not the only message.
And if I may, Commissioner, just quickly to add to that, savings are important. I'm not trying to minimize them. I'm strictly trying to say that when I purchased my first cell phone, probably my second, maybe even my third, I was concerned whether I was going to save on my monthly plan. I have no idea how that stacks up now. All I know is that I got a device that does all the things that I want it to do, well, not exactly, it's a BlackBerry, but all the things that I hope it will do, and that I'll make my next decision not so much on whether there's $10 a month, $120 a year difference. I realize everybody doesn't make that decision, but that's the way I view it.
Thank you. Commissioner Cawley.
I'm already over my allotment of questions, so I'll just say I look forward, Mr. Meath, to these new education efforts of your organization. Duquesne Light, it's been gratifying to see the growth in residential shoppers in the Duquesne service territory. So continue to encourage them, because I know most of your large commercial industrial load has shopped a long time ago. And Sonny, we owe you a lot, because our PAPowerSwitch.com website took a lot of lessons from what the Office of Consumer Advocate has been doing for several years now. And just the fact that you led the way, and you've kept your site up and are willing to mail the information to customers is a big benefit. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Cawley. I guess I can ask five questions because of all the, but I won't do that. I wrote down one theme: what's the value proposition? And I think what we're getting at is savings is a huge driver in it, but the service aspect of it is also important. But I go back to these survey results. You know, 40% said in one survey it's not worth savings. 16% didn't have time. That sounds like a lot of soccer moms in southeastern Pennsylvania. 88% are going to the direct energy presentation, price-driven market, and then 17% just didn't understand the process. So, Sonny, you've had a constructive dialogue with us on this understanding the process. What more should we be doing? And you've been out there with your team, and we've done consumer ed events, but in your view, what more should we be doing?
I think all of the suggestions today have been good ones regarding consumer education. I think the fact that that the marketers are now formally stepping up to the plate doing education is great. I think if we can, it's very I agree with Dr. Madonna's point, or maybe it was one of the other witnesses, that if you can get to that second page on your website or my website, an awful lot of customers are going to say, whoa, I actually can save some money based on the current prices. So I think getting them, driving customers, getting that message out to get to the website, to our toll-free number where we'll send the shopping guide. The consumer letter, I think that the MedEd Penelec letter that's going out now, I'm going to be real interested to see how that comes out, because there you're giving people a concrete piece of, you know, five pieces of concrete information, the five offers in their service territory. So I certainly support that. And as you'll see from our testimony this afternoon, we do agree that there can be enhancements made where customers on some type of an opt-in voluntary basis can be encouraged, certainly at least to take a look at shopping. And if they like what they see, to switch.
Okay. Any other panelists want to take that up? Michael?
Three things.
Sure.
Number one, keep setting the tone. I'm four places this week. This is a joy, number one. Number two, the EDCs are stepping up to the plate, and that's great. This has been a 100-year industry. It's going to take time. Somebody said it earlier. It's complicated. Yeah, I teach at Syracuse University, and this is serious, complicated stuff. You're going about it the right way. Number three, we need a consistent approach. So as much as we possibly can, while we may disagree about other things, about the timing of an opt-in or what's the default end state or whatever the case may be, we should agree on what choice means or what it can mean, which is why I caution about savings.
Mr. Chairman, I found it interesting, too, and we've found this in our territory. I'm not sure who brought it up, but the difference in generation and supplier, the difference in an EDC and an EGS, breaking that down, even getting further down into the weeds as to what is a kilowatt hour? How does that figure up? Maybe those are things, maybe we need to take a step back and get a little further into the meat of what they're shopping for and how to figure those things out. Maybe that's a part that's missing in some of the education pieces.
Speaking of education pieces, how many times do you touch your customer throughout the year with a promotion on competition?
Almost on a monthly basis in our newsletter. We also have it on our website. Numerous hits, obviously, through that every year. We talk about it as much as possible in many of our advertisements that we do outside. So quite often.
Thank you. Before I call on our next panel, I'm just want to thank you for the kind remarks that you've provided us. We're thinking about putting you all on our compensation committee for the nice remarks, but more importantly, thank you for the work that you're doing also to promote electric choice. I want to remind everybody, a couple times there was a slippage here when we called it electric deregulation. It's not deregulation, it's restructuring, because the industry is still regulated. So let's not forget that. And there's oversight from the Public Utility Commission. So again, I want to thank the panel. And if I could call on our next panel to get assembled, Richie Hudson, Andrea Williams, Tanya McCluskey, and Dick Webster, if you could come forward.